Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Nero Show. In today's episode,
BMC have released their new Team Machine R01. What do we think?
Keegan Swenson gets beaten by a 40-year-old, but the US pro gravel scene is legitimized. Let's talk about the Gravel World Champs.
The death of the training wheel. Are we missing out on something by always running race wheels?
And who do you call when you have a mechanical to avoid a divorce? All right, let's get into it.
New BMC got launched. The Team Machine R. Firstly, why the hell did they call it the Team Machine? Can someone please explain? It is an aero bike. Their aero bikes are the time machines. So now in their all-road climbing bike category, they now dumps this aero climbing all-rounder, and I don't understand it. Because it's more, looking at it, it is more aero bike category than climbing bike. It doesn't even look like an all-rounder. You saw that on a website's page, you're going, that's their aero bike.
Well, the question that we don't know the answer to is this the death of the time machine? And it doesn't sound like it is. So you potentially are arguing here that they've got plans to create an Uber aero bike.
I mean, but that's then on my Cam hope. Nichols' video, he says they've got plans to do an Uber lightweight bike, which would make more sense because I don't know how you can make it more. It's an aero frame, it's got deep sections. Hard to see that sitting in a lineup against another more aero bike. So it's semantics because it's just the name. I guess it doesn't really matter, but that was just confusing.
I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. I think you could. I think they could. I do think they could go the full Ribble, just absolute massive down tubes, everything. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, so was this so from a brand's perspective, so they've sat down in a room and they've said, we don't want this to be an aero bike. That's what they've said. Is this just the SL8 effect coming into action where they want to have a bike that competes with the SL8 as an all-rounder? So they're just calling their aero bike their all-road bike so it's in the same category as the SL8. Like, is that why?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The SL8 effect.
The SL8 effect. Yep. Yep. They've decided that the focus groups are saying that if you call something an aero bike, it's going to ostracize a larger proportion of the buying public. So let's stay away from that word, but still lean on the aero factors of this bike to sell it, which is weird. Yes. Thank you. And remember when we talked about this, didn't we? I'm sure we did. When we saw Ben O'Connor's bike with that sick wrap on it at the Tour or the Dauphiné, wherever it was, we were calling it the Time Machine, weren't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, update to their Time Machine, which is what it is. It's just they've chosen to go on with the Team Machine. You said they're a focus group set.
We'll get him in.
Okay.
Get a focus group together.
Now, can anyone in the comments let us know if you've been part of a focus group for cycling? I would be pretty impressed if a brand was spending money doing focus groups on their products. Do you think they have enough money to be doing that? Or it's just a captain's call in the marketing room?
I think Trek and Specialized do. Yeah, I do. I do think Spec and Specialized do. Yeah. Trek and Specialized. But the rest.
If that's true, there must be someone watching or listening to this right now that has been in one of these and has been doing the survey for a brand or an anonymous brand. There's got to be someone. I'd love to hear what they've done. If it exists, you're out there. I'd be impressed. I think that's cool. If our industry is big enough where they're doing, yeah, focus group testing. It's like very, sounds very sort of political, sort of like big money. We need the right.
I wonder how it would work in the cycling world, because I'm sure it's not like, you know, come to the local theatre and we'll show you pictures of new bikes and go from there. I don't know. I feel like it's a dealer's, it'll be something through their dealers, the specialised stores where they'll ask dealers to, maybe we can ask Grant this, to potentially survey their top 20 customers for, you know, whether they want a new Venge or a new Roubaix or something. Like, I don't know. I kind of potentially feel like it's something like that. And that's why when we talked about, like, what Specialized next move is, why I think that matters is because I reckon they're the only ones doing the research into what the market wants.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Curious to see. Back to the bike.
So are you a fan of this or are you not a fan of this?
Okay. I'm a fan. Okay. I'm a BMC fan. I think the bike looks amazing and it ticks nearly every box for me. Now, if we get rid of the limited edition version, which is €15,000, and we just go to the Dura Ace version, which is the one we can compare to all the other top brands, it's €14,000, which is 23,000 Australian. So it's 3,000 more than an SL8, for example. So when I'm judging a bike and looking through it, I'm always looking at it with the price in mind. So I'm kind of looking for what's wrong with it. Now, there's a lot of things it's doing right, but at that price, it needs to be perfect. And there's one thing it's done wrong, in my opinion, and that's the tire width.
The tire clearance,
right? Cam Nichols' video, the BMC guy said it was max 28.
Mm.
According to the Escape Collective article reviewing it, it's max 30. But we can say somewhere between max 28 and 30, it's one grade lower than most of the 2024 bikes. The SL8's 32 mil max width. That's the new standard for a 2024 bike.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm looking at a bike that costs €14,000, I don't think that's good enough to be max 30. Because there are people that run 32s. Like it's 2024. People want the wide tires. And I can't see how this got through. And the reason why it stands out is I look at features that you can argue. You can argue between the mix of aero and lightweight. You can argue what geometry might be best. But the claimed tire clearance is just a black and white, more is better.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, if it didn't have that, I'd pretty much say it's perfect, to be honest. It's doing a lot right, but the tire clearance.
From a design perspective, I wonder why you, because the fork's massive.
The fork's massive.
Like why,
yeah.
What is holding you back here? Like I don't feel like the Red Bull engineers were sitting around going, oh no, we can't. We can't cram another mil of clearance in there. And it does seem like an absolute no-brainer. It's almost like how the on mobile phones now they have the IP, what is it, IP7 water resistance. It's just like box tipped, move on, next one.
Because there's no arguing it. It's on the spec sheet. It's like you can't twist it or spin it. It's just there. It must be something to do with the rear triangle. Doesn't fit a 32. It's just a shame. I mean, go into the specs a bit more. It comes with a power meter. Great. It comes with narrow handlebars. Thank God, finally. Again, according to Cam's videos, 38s as standard.
I think 36.
Or was it 30? I was going to say 36. Let me look up my notes, actually.
Yeah. No, I was a...
You're 36 in the hoods, and then it flares to the drops. So 36 as standard. Finally, they get it. You want to ride your bike fast on an aero bike, getting our handlebars, so points for that. I'm like loving it. It just looks amazing. But at that price, one thing that's not right and, you know, it needs to be perfect at that price. What did you reckon?
Don't disagree. From the purely bike perspective, I like the look of it. I do like that there seemed to be, yes, I know people will in the comments say that a lot of this has been done before, but I do appreciate the attempt to kind of differentiate and maybe this is trying something. I do think that fork design is relatively unique and going against the chat that is circulating the Sydney bubble at the moment, this is a bottom bracket that got bigger and chunkier and what are we calling it? The Mariana bottom bracket? Sounds like a friggin' trench in the ocean somewhere in the Pacific. I kind of like that. I think that it's a look. It certainly looks a little bit different. Everything else, that top tube kind of little kink in it, isn't necessarily for me. But it does look different. It looks like a BMC. It does have a BMC look and feel to it, which I appreciate.
The top tube kink looks like the Bianchi kink.
The Specialismo one.
Yes. They all are kinking. That
the modern day kink.
Yes. So that's an interesting feature. Let me look that up actually. Specialismo. Yeah, it's kinky. So I don't know why it's the way they've done the paint.
They love that stuff.
It makes it more, it looks kinkier with the angle. I don't know why you would accentuate an already odd looking feature. But I do love how they paint the cockpit the same as the into the head tube. It's like, oh, it looks so good. It looks, oh, yep. God, it looks good.
Yep, they've nailed that. Absolutely nailed that. All right. Can I just quickly talk about this launch? All right. So we do give a little bit of shit about brands for the way they launch their products and, well, ignore who I think they should be using to promote their products and get the name out there. I think BMC have nailed this, okay, from a lots of different angles. And some of them are cynical, but that's fine. That's promotion. It should be about that sort of stuff. So the first one is, yes, we've gone and got some YouTubers over there. Thank God. Well done. I mean, obviously I'm biased in that regard. We've been calling about this for a while. But just go get an old-fashioned YouTuber over there. Do a first look at it. Nice and easy. And gets pushes that. It's nice, soft, what do they call it? Like a soft launch. It's not like a stupid overproduced video that comes out. It's just like, here are the bikes, here are the options, and Cam's your perfect guy to do that because he just steps you through the process. Happy days. I like that. Well done. Go get a couple of former pros involved. So they had Cancellara in there. Nice. Has a nice following. Very good. Get a few Girona Bubble people in there. Get that sort of stuff all pressed out into their little world. Happy days, very, very good. Beyond who actually did it, I reckon they're just leaning enough into the Red Bull thing as well. There's not necessarily any detail. They all do this, right? Yeah, who was it that had McLaren? Someone was.
They're specialised with McLaren.
With McLaren, whatever. But just sort of soft mention Red Bull because it's the F1 brand.
Verstappen's face just kind of pops into the promo for 3 seconds.
No. Max had a look at the shapes and he gave it the big tick, you know. But just enough of that because they know that Red Bull's got the froth at the moment. You know, we're talking about them every second week. So throw that in as well. Couple of new little features in there, the big fork. I reckon they nailed it. I haven't seen any of the quote-unquote Elizabeth loves when I use this term, but the legacy media stuff on it. And I don't think it needed it. I actually really rate the way this was launched and I'll be really interested to see how this sort of does from here on in. And it didn't rely on a pro team thing. And I think maybe that's what forced BMC to do this because they're not going to have a pro team next year. And this is the thing though, because they're trying to sell, aren't they?
I'm stressed for them.
Yeah, they're trying to sell pure performance. Without anyone winning or even competing at an elite level, you're going to have to press other buttons, aren't you?
No offense to Tudor Pro Cycling, but I don't see much of them. Now, I'm not from Switzerland, obviously, or anywhere in Europe, but I don't know. Not in the World Tour next year. That's... You know, and they're putting a lot of resources into you. They got Cancellara, so they got the ambassador. Then they got the team. The team doesn't get that many eyeballs. It just doesn't. It's just not. I never really see much of them. So that's a tough year for them.
If you're selling performance, it's a slog, isn't it? Because they're not selling vibe. You know. Ooh. No, they're
not
selling performance.
No, so not
they're
vibe,
selling performance here.
But they're selling froth. Like BMC as a brand still has a Pinarello-esque
engineering expertise. Yes, yeah, but with that,
clinging onto that,
you need. I think you do need the images on the front doing their thing, don't you? I mean, that's a lot of legacy, like heritage to some. Like, if you're still relying on a poster of Cadell winning the 2012 tour, you know, you're starting to sort of stretch it.
It'd be interesting to see it because, yeah, not in the world tour. That's brutal. That's really hard. When I say that, I mean as a team that was already in the world tour and had costs of business associated with that and then needing the sales to back that up, to then pull out would be brutal.
Mm.
For a brand that wasn't already in there, a Winspace, for example, it's a totally different brand, but they can obviously make a heap of money without being in that space. So, yeah, it's just that already being in there and then getting removed. That's what I mean by not in the world tour. It's not to say that brands aren't successful without being in the world tour. We've seen that with a heap of brands. It's just other way around is hard.
Well, that was kind of the thing we were talking about the other week with the potential merger. Like, that would have been, I reckon, a disaster for Cervelo because that's what they're hanging everything on right now. And the rumours are, I don't know if they're rumours or it's just now fact, but Pond, the owners of Cervelo, are the ones who have come in and are stumping up that next 12 months of funding for the formerly Jumbo-Visma, I don't know what they're called now, next year, to get them through another year and avoided the merger, which would have put the merged team onto Specialized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which would have cost them way more in the long run.
Yeah.
You would have thought, not being in the world tour, so yeah.
I was just going to say, so BMC selling performance or that kind of thing. I just did want to mention this because I got some feedback from owners and people involved in that Standard brand when I was calling them an influencer brand.
Yeah.
All right. And it was kind of, how do I put this? Like, it was sort of like implying that what I said was negative about Standard. Let me say something. All right. So if your bike brand is selling vibe and selling aesthetics and selling good looks and you will look, what is that? That is vibe, it's cool. If you're selling a cool factor, that's your go, and you get people who, what people think are the coolest people, the influencers, to ride your bike, that's a good thing. You've succeeded to get the cool people to ride your bike, therefore,
by definition,
you have succeeded. And so, me saying that it's an influencer's brand, like anyone at Standard is not going to sit in front of me and say, no, we really back our R&D wind tunnel testing versus the finest established. No one at Standard is going to say that to me. They're going to say, hey, look, our stuff looks shit hot. You want one. I'm like, hell yeah, that looks cool.
You also want an entirely phased out material.
Yeah,
no one performance uses alloy anymore. I don't understand why you'd even bother trying to make that point. Just own it.
Exactly.
Because it looks cool.
It looks cool. Get over it, all right? Your brand is an influencer brand and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact,
well, if you want to compete in performance, go and show us your frame beating a SL8 in a wind tunnel. Good luck.
Well, yeah. I mean, and two things can be true at the same time. Like, when I said Factor was an influencer brand, that probably is a bit of a criticism on them. Like, if you think about it, because you go onto their website or anything they're trying to push, it's like race-proven performance. You know, they're really trying to sell the performance aspect. Like, and for me then to say, oh, yeah, whatever, it's an influencer brand, is shitting on it,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, when you go, anyway, I've said it.
Yes.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Yeah, I'm with you.
Cool.
I'm with you.
While we're on bikes and a little bit of YouTube, your favorite and my favorite bike reviewer of 2023, Patrick Leno, is back.
Yeah.
Patty is on a giant Propel.
Ooh.
He has stepped off some of the Chinese carbons and he's on a Propel.
The bike the Nero show thought was fast.
Thought was fast. That's right. Have you any thoughts on maybe what Patrick's...
I have no idea what the video is. Haven't watched it.
Patrick's a fan. Patrick's yes. likes it. Yeah, no, he's a big fan. Big fan of the rear triangle, according to Patrick.
Okay.
But no, in was kind of interesting watching because he's made a bit of a thing out of reviewing a lot of the different Chinese brands, and he kind of addresses it and he just says basically the shit's all over it.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, there's probably a little bit of first ride, as we all do. Oh my God, this bike's incredible.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
The brain is not very good at distinguishing. It's good at picking up differences. Distinguishing good from bad is quite difficult. I have a feeling if you got any random road cyclist, put them on an objectively worse bike and sent them for a ride, they'd probably tell you it's amazing because it just feels different. You don't really know what's good and bad unless you've tested it up a climb or something like that. So the first ride review is always a bit...
First ride impression.
Impression. Oh, just an impression.
Impression.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're waiting for the full review.
You'd think, I mean, if Giant can't make a Propel that's better than a Yolio, there's something wrong with the universe. So it's not exactly surprising.
All right, but I like his sort of, he just gets in, rips in, rides around town and tells us what he thinks. So, but he's put another call out. He's like, anyone else, let us know any other premium bikes you'd like me to get to review. So clearly, Paddy's got a connection. Yeah,
we get him on a Bianchi?
Get him on an Ultra.
Yeah, Ultra or the Specialisma, yep. Please, because there's lacking.
Please, someone get in contact with Patrick Leno and send him one of those bikes.
We're always talking about fast bikes, but we were at a crit on Sunday. There was a guy in A grade on Schwalbe Durano Plus tyres. They are honestly got to be top three slowest tyres in existence. You've got commuter tyres. Then you've got beyond commuter, which is like you're never ever going to take these off and you're never going to flat. And the justification was, it was a good old school justification.
Oh, you spoke to Sid.
I used to ask him, why'd you even bother showing up? It's so slow. He said, but I feel really fast when I put my race wheels on.
What are we doing?
And I said, we're not good enough for you. Does this not count? But back in the day, you'd run your training wheels. The day of that's done.
The day is gone. We've talked about a little bit of this in the past, but that's a disc brake thing. That's a disc brake thing because there is no point me ever taking off my race wheels.
But do you think you're losing something from doing that? Does this guy have a point? Have we lost something in always having race wheels and race tires?
Yes. 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 Definitely. Yes. I don't have
From a training point of view, now I should probably, as the coach, I should probably have the answer, not you, but from a training point of view or from a vibes point of view?
Both. Both, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the vibe, there's nothing like just putting the race wheels on day of the race. You just gain 10 watts, yeah. 100%, absolutely. And you're more inclined to ride in not necessarily wet weather and stuff like that, but there's take more difficult routes, whatever it might be, if you're just on the bog standard bash along wheels, definitely. I do think there's probably also that little thing of, you know, the rides that we do are set routes most of the time. You know, it's a 3 hour this way, it's 2 hours that way, it's 4 hours that way. If you are pushing the Schwalbes, you're probably doing a few extra watts on that endurance
at least
day.
20 extra.
At least per wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely.
So what do you run then? So you and I pretty much train on race setups all the time. Do you have anything up your sleeve that you pull out on race day? We raced last night. Anything up the sleeve to make it feel special? Or is it gone? It's just...
I train with a skin suit now, Jesse. That's how far I have come. And it was not that long ago. We say this a lot, but 2018, alloy C24s, and I wouldn't even take them off for midweek races. They'd stay on. They would stay on. Now I'm skin suits for a Wednesday interval session.
yeah.
You know?
Oh, it's just, it's yeah, sad. I'm trying to think of what do I have? I don't really have anything even left for race day.
In fact, I'd probably argue for racing now, I'm de-optimized because I end up putting cameras on my bike.
Yeah.
And as opposed to when I'm training, when I don't do that. Like I flirted with putting the 30s on like for training, like Acuna days and stuff like that. But ultimately I just couldn't be
stuffed. Yeah.
Just sort of, yeah.
It's also caused because the tires are so good now. You can run a GP5000 that have bugger all rolling resistance and you hardly flat them anyway. So they've made the training setup kind of obsolete, which I don't know where I sit on, but I have the air hub. So for those that don't know what an air hub is, it's I take my front wheel out, I put the air hub, which is a whole front wheel, and the hub has magnets in it which suck watts, so it adds resistance. So I'll do that for training. So that kind of works in a similar way to having a really slow training setup, and I appreciate doing that every now and again.
It's a good flex, too.
Yeah, it is. Very good flex. Yeah. Yeah. Who does this guy think he is? Yeah. Oh, you ride too fast.
Gloves. I reckon gloves. That's literally the only race moment thing I will do is put gloves on. Actually, quick shout. Has anyone got good durable gloves that aren't the stupid aero? I'm not doing the aero like friggin' Michael Jackson ones that go up to your elbows. Or rubber gloves that go up to your elbows. I want like just a normal glove that's going to last more than 3 weeks. Like every glove I run just seems to demolish. Yeah.
Rafa Protein mitts?
Destroyed.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, might have been going pretty good.
They just flap about.
Yeah. Might have been going all right. But I have training gloves and racing gloves.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the training gloves get the slobber on them. And
beautiful.
We've had the glove discussion before. They don't get washed often enough. Mm. Gloves. Just sad. It's kind of sad you don't have a race.
I mean, I even run the same helmet now. The days of putting on an aero helmet are gone. It's just one fits all. Yeah. Very disappointing. Right, year two of the Gravel World Championships.
Yep.
And we'll be the first to admit that the first edition, we couldn't jump on and shit on quick enough. Year two, has that changed? What do you think?
Well, my opinion is kind of crap because I've only watched the GCN highlights, which were about 5 minutes. I don't know if I've gotten the full picture. I looked like a great race. I think it was cool. I'm a fan from the 5 minutes I've seen of it. Deserved winner.
Mm.
So what have you watched of it? Was there a full race coverage?
So this is half the problem, right? So I obviously Jen's gone over there and we were talking to her about the whole thing. So I knew when the women's race was on. And after, so obviously Australia, time difference, blah, blah, blah. So woke up the next day expecting to see the full race, et cetera, of the women's race. Nothing on GCN, couldn't find anything, couldn't really find. Normally then you find the highlights package or something on YouTube. It was as though the race didn't exist. Turns out, look, there's whole shitstorm about this, about how the promoters didn't actually allow for there to be a live coverage initially and the UCI was surprised by it, et cetera, I'm not going to go into all those sort of details. Turns out there were still cameras and stuff going around. So it was filmed and there is a really good 30, 40 minutes highlights package of the last sort of 50Ks that exists of the women's race, which I have watched. Fast forward to the guys' race, there was live coverage, but again, it was really only the last hour and a half. And yeah, it's like dirt bikes following these guys in pretty random remote places. And the race is kind of run. It's like fast forwarding to the last 10Ks of a Tour de France stage and you're like, oh, okay, these guys are in the break. Right, these are the guys fighting it out. So you don't get the whole race playing out sort of thing. All right. Which okay, initially on the surface, I'm there going, oh, that shit, that's on a crap that we didn't get to see all that. But how many good live, we talk about this a lot, like how many good live or even review videos have you seen any of the Lifetime Grand Prix stuff?
Nothing.
Doesn't exist.
I haven't really watched anything, no.
So, you know, I mean, it's better than that, which
it's
is
just an unfortunate time of the year. I just, even if they had a full race coverage, I just, there's nothing in me that would watch it.
No, I disagree.
I'm over it.
I was pumped. I was pumped.
I don't know how you managed to get the momentum going again.
You're mad. You're mad. I was fully up for this.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was buying into all the storylines. So I was like our chat to Dylan, I was this the big thing for me was this going to legitimize the US gravel scene? Okay, we got these pro semi-pro guys over there that are all meant to be bossing these amazing events. We've got the old washed up has-been pros as well. What's going to play out? And I was kind of fascinated by it. Unfortunately, there's no, with the coverage, there was no actual way of seeing how that, the only, you know, all you can do is go look at the top 10 and go, right, well, Keegan finished, what, fifth or sixth? Fifth. So.
Fucking what a legend. How good's that? That's totally ticked the box in terms of the criteria of trying to legitimize the US gravel scene. A fifth at Worlds, tick 100%. And if he's out sprinted, because he finished with Valverde, they mm-hmm. were together. Mm. If he had managed to put together a bit more of a sprint, he's then fourth. But, I mean, that's about as good as you're going to get, really. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Did you want him to win?
Well.
Right away, solo.
Okay. So, yes, you're right. Like, if he's on the podium, this conversation is very different for me. And again, it's hard to know how like everyone else played out. Look, the thing with him is clearly he is a step above everyone else in those lifetime Grand Prix races this year. That's been pretty obvious. So he is above everyone. So I was kind of, and this is meant to be on his, this is his shit, right? This is his jam. And the guys he's competing against, that's not what they do day in, day out. So I thought, I mean, maybe it's not as split as that in terms of a discipline, but I did think that he'd be right there fighting for the win. And I think also for me, I mean, that's a lot of pressure on one guy. The rest of the lifetime Grand Prix athletes didn't really factor either.
No, but did you see them roll off the start?
Yeah.
The field was huge, basically going into a glorified cyclocross circuit, it looked like. For an individual with no really any teammates, just to even be in the guys making the top one, two, or three groups in that, that's so difficult. Against guys that are used to fighting for position, that's what roadies do all year. So in terms of positioning, the roadies have a massive advantage over the gravel guys in terms of just the bar-to-bar positioning side of things. Technical side, obviously, different story. But I don't know. He blew me away. That was – I didn't really honestly analyze it too much beforehand, but – I had no assumption he was going to be in the top five or top 10. I thought he'd float around, you know, mid-pack. Okay, fair enough, against World Tour pros. The fact that he got fifth, I'm huge, huge result.
I don't know. I didn't have a horse in the race as such, but I was still left, maybe it has, I don't know. It hasn't kind of just written it down. And think the other thing playing in the back of my mind is the women's results. So the women's results... Okay, so Lauren Stevens came sixth. She's American, but she's kind of a hybrid because she is a a World Tour pro, but she does ride a little bit of the Grand Prix stuff. But the women who dominate the Grand Prix stuff weren't really that relevant in the race either. That was mostly the top end. And I suppose the difference there is the World Tour pros in the women's race were the legit full top end. No offense to Marta Mohoric, who's won a monument, but the top three or top four are kind of very, very consistent in the women's pro rank. So I don't know. For me, I'm not sold either way yet. What do you expect then from a gravel coverage? Like, do we expect a full road? You know, I want the follow cars, I want the motos in between, I want everything. Like, is that what it should be at this point?
100%. I mean, if you can't see the entire race, what's the point in watching? You want to see when the action happens. In a gravel race, it happens from start to finish.
But this is going to come straight back to this argument in the first place that last year's course was so shit, but it was easy to film because it was essentially a bike path. And it was easy for there to be coverage, and it was a glorified cyclocross race, which was easy to film. Like, yeah,
I think racing first, course first. You need to have if you're doing a gravel world, it needs to be a proper gravel. It needs to be gravel, not footpath. And ideally some sort of hills you'd want to see. Course first, how they actually technically film that. I mean,
so my take is I agree, but we don't necessarily need live. I think that if we got a really good 2 hours of brake formation, the whole thing well packaged, that would suffice if that meant a really good course. That'll be my take.
Logistical or technological challenge, is it?
I would imagine, especially if you start, you know, look at some of the races, especially like in the US and stuff, that are going into like back ass and nowhere mountains. Yeah, I mean.
So you'd rather have a camera there even if there's no wireless coverage and then you upload. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's a higher priority, having a coverage, put a pack, upload it the next day. Who cares? We want to see.
Yeah, it would have been good if you actually watched more than 5 minutes before we talked about this, but anyway.
But again, I don't really care about gravel. It's still, I would, even if they had the entire race with amazing coverage, I'm not going to watch it. If it was at the start of the year when I had nothing else really to watch and it was the start of the road season, I'd be interested. But it is October and I'm already washed up from the season as it is, and then it's a really long gravel race. Yeah, probably not going to watch. Like, I would stay up to watch the Tour of Flanders or Paris-Roubaix.
But then if you put it in around there, you're not going to get any of those guys doing it. I mean, this is – like, Mohoric isn't going to race this in April.
You don't – it'd be good training, don't you reckon? It'd be good to slip it in the classic season. Classics, long-distance races, short punches, technical ability, similar demands. I reckon it could – you could put it in. It could work.
I don't know. I just feel like the risk of crashing, maybe it's not as high given the bunches are smaller, and okay, your chances of coming down are higher, but the chances of an injury are potentially less. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I always feel like the end of year is that's when your world championships or events are on. I don't know. Can we just quickly mention Alejandro? He's got to come back. Surely 2024, someone's going to sign him. He's got to get a contract, that boy. If he's getting around, come on. Like,
if Cav gets a contract.
If Cav's getting a contract, he's clearly still angling for one, I reckon. If someone properly came up to him and said, Alejandro, come on, pin it on one more time, he'd have to agree, surely. Like, he's got nothing else to do. Some of his DSing this year has been pretty terrible, so... I don't know. Get him in there. Get him on back on a bike.
Kit's back in stock, by the way. Skin suits are back in stock if you want to grab one. There's also a black version of the skin suit. People wanted to ride the skin suit but didn't necessarily want to. If they're racing, sometimes you need plain kit, or do they just prefer plain design? So I did a run of pretty much plain black ones. It's the exact same. It's just plain black with a couple of Nero logos. Jerseys are back in stock. And Thanks to people that bought them, I've asked people to leave reviews. So if you want to get feedback on what they're like, what people think, some sizing things, go on the website, check out the reviews, and you can hear what some people that already bought them think of it. So have a look.
Links down below. Some news in the tech world this week. Basically, Apple are now not going to be supporting the original Apple Watch. So any new software developments, et cetera, won't be pushed out to that original Apple Watch. And there's a phrase in the tech world, I think it's basically planned obsoletism or something like that, that, you know, everything has a lifespan, and beyond that, everything has a lifespan that will not be supported anymore by the brand. We're probably not at that stage yet in the cycling world, but it's going to come.
We're going to start a conspiracy right here.
Well, it's got to come, right? Because there's no way that all the tech that we're using right now will look the same in 10 years, will look the same in 15 years, and there'll be certainly components, like elements to this stuff that will be obsolete. You'll have it, it'll be in everyday usage now, and in 10 years it won't be used at all. Any thoughts, ideas where we could be
headed?
I
don't know.
Here?
It's an interesting conspiracy thing to go down, because there's just inadvertent obsolescence. Like, I have an 8-speed bike and I'm struggling to find a chain. I wouldn't say that's planned. That's just unfortunate. You've got a really odd product. And even things like, I've got a Garmin 500 from 15 years ago. I don't know if Garmin are going to keep investing money in updating that. Technically, it's not in the evil planned side of obsolescence, probably just in a natural life cycle. Is there anything which I think is...
Well, there's one that came to my mind straight away. The first one that I think, like, is the SRAM battery. So the way I see this, well, there's got to be a point at some point in the development of that component or that group set, that battery becomes a design issue for whatever they want to produce going forward. So whether it be they want to reduce the weight, so they might have to reduce the size of the battery, or maybe they reduce the reliance on two batteries or whatever that might be. So whatever the battery is that you have at the moment, which is pretty much, I think, backwards compatible to the original SRAM ETAP, will ultimately end up being obsolete. I mean, you kind of see it in little things like the Shimano 12-speed cable is different charging cable to what the previous one was. Mm-hmm. But I think that SRAM battery is an obvious one to happen.
The one that comes to mind for me is the chains. So as you get more gears in the back, the chains have to get thinner because it has to fit in the space you've got between the cassette and the frame. So in theory, the chains don't last as long because there's less material there. So there's things like that. But I think the bike industry as a whole, call me naive, but are pretty sustainability conscious. So I would actually say with most of, I'm thinking just through my setup with my bike, I don't go through that much stuff actually. I'm on a wax-based lubricant, so the chains last longer, the cassettes last longer. With electronic shifting, I'm not going through cables. I'm not going through outer cables. I've had my DI2 group set it's going on 3 or 4 years now. I think in terms of that sort of obsolescence thing, the bike industry is pretty good. I mean, the overarching thing is just I think they are pretty good,
yeah.
Actually.
I mean, it's obviously, it is different because, like, the software enhancements to get pushed out to, like, a new Apple Watch or whatever, like, is, like you just said, your DI2 is 5 years old, whatever it is. It does exactly what you want it to do. There's not really any firmware push that's going to, oh, my God, this has really ramped up my DI2. You're happy with it. Like, it's going to be kind of different from that perspective. I do understand that. I just think that as we'll get more and more electronic, I mean, even stuff like Ant Plus, like, I wonder whether Ant Plus will suddenly like just be sort of phased out because it is a kind of shitty data protocol that doesn't work very well. Whether that just suddenly just doesn't exist in years to come. I don't know.
I think it's kind of I think for the bike industry now I've thought about it a bit more as a whole pretty good. I mean, it's up to you. Obviously, there's stuff getting released all the time. You can update if you want, but I think they've been pretty good at. I haven't really seen much evidence of anything from a planned point of view. Like you have, like if you're on an iPhone 10 now, you know, it doesn't work that well. The cameras are clearly not as good. You're really having, like, if we're comparing to phones, you kind of really have to update every 3 or 4 years, if you're actually creating content. Bikes, I'm on a 7-year-old bike and I'm not complaining. I'm on a third iPhone 13 Pro. There's no way I'd be on a 5-year-old iPhone over my dead body. So that's cool. I rate that.
I don't know if this is the reverse of that, but the trend to smaller chain rings.
Yep.
Okay. So what point do I want to make here? I'll just talk and see where it goes. It wasn't that long ago where it would have been kind of shameful to ride on anything but a standard chain ring. Now, okay, and that's talking from me. I remember being a B and C grader, and even then I was on a standard, and it wouldn't have even crossed my mind.
You're going to have to explain what a standard is, because I don't think the COVID babies are going to know what a standard is. Because what are they saying, like a 48? That's okay. Standard?
So I'm talking about the front chain ring. Yeah, and that the front chain ring was a 5339 and at the rear was an 11-25 or 11-28 maybe. Yep. And that was, when I say standard, like everybody had that who I knew, and if you went and got a compact, you were the guy with the compact. I remember the first time someone got one and we kind of pointed and laughed at it. And we're not, like, again, we were not pro racers or anything. It was just like that's what it was, because it was perceived as a disadvantage for you, okay? And, like, I look around now. So the reason I bring that up is I see lots of pictures of that Edwin builds a cache. A beautiful bikes, does a really beautiful build of a Dogma or a whatever it might be, right? And they're all 50-32s, maybe a mid-compact. So a mid-compact would be a 52-36 maximum. And I can just remember, like, if a beautiful, like, mint bike like that had gone out with that sort of front chain ring, it would have been like laughed at. And now that's just the way it is. I don't know if I'm not necessarily saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's probably a good thing.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because there's so much confusion around chain ring size. I thank SRAM a lot for this, because they kind of normalized smaller chain rings. They kind of eased us into it with the 10 tooth cog, being like, don't worry, your top speed's still the same. And so we all have now kind of gotten used to the smaller chain rings. So I think I got to give them credit for that. It's usually just the Shimano people that have a chainring pride. It's like it's just something they wear with pride. It's like, I'm on the 54 and I'm fast, and it's a thing of pride. And there's also just a lot of people thinking they're going to spin things out. I'm spinning out the 5011 and I'm...
Really?
For people that race, there is.
Okay.
Definitely. For people that race... As a coach, I hear it semi-often. Like, I think I'm going to spin out, or I'm spinning out. And I don't understand it, because a 5011 at 110 RPM is still going 60-plus K an hour. If you're getting dropped that, you just need to draft better. So I did an entire national series on a 5034 compact my first year. So the whole I'm spinning out my big gear was fake news to begin with. The fact that we now see more smaller chain rings on the average rider is awesome.
Totally disagree. Totally disagree. Get them on some big, unusable chain rings. I want to see some grinding going on. I love that image. Like, put it all aside. I mean, okay, here's what I actually want to say. The people buying these, spending all this money on these beautiful Dogmas, you know, they care about aesthetics, okay? Riding, meh, whatever. They get around. They're happy with that kind of thing. And that's not a criticism on these people. People can do whatever the hell they want. This is a style comment, all right? So if you're going to go and spend the money and absolutely trip out your bike, get a big chain ring on there because that's what you want. You want the picture. I know you want that picture of the bike at the cafe or whatever it is or up against a wall. There is nothing better than the big picture of the big chain ring on there. Trust me, there's at least 70, 80 more likes in there if you push that boundaries. Get it on there.
It is so annoying to have a big chain ring. When I went from the 50-34 to a standard, just riding around is so annoying because you have to go into the small ring more often.
Sure.
It's so inconvenient. Yeah. Run your 48s.
If you have a mechanical, it's a fatal mechanical, right? So, you know, you're out of canisters, whatever it might be. Who do you call?
An Uber? 100% of the time.
100% of the time. Let's remove you from the Sydney metropolitan area. So Uber's not an option. Okay, so the reason...
I would never call my wife if I got a flat or... Just call an Uber. Just suck it up.
You can't.
It's so...
Let me explain. Let me explain. I had this exact experience, all right? So out in Berwick, sort of Kangaroo Valley... I had a mechanical my crank set came loose. Long story.
Edwin?
No, actually not. No, actually it wasn't.
Okay.
Descending Berry Mountain. And I was, anyway, pulled over. I was like, oh, God. Right. So there I'm sort of trying to work it out. And it crossed my, like, I could not get home. Okay? Could not get home. There's no Uber option at this point. And I'm like you because... The moment you make that call, right, there's potential for divorce because your partner is probably, certainly in our circumstance, is performing the duties that really you have removed yourself from in the first place. So they don't want to not only be informed that you're require some sort of attention, but also... They're just being reminded that you're out there doing the thing that you're enjoying. Anyway, you kind of know what I'm saying.
I see what you mean. You see where I'm going.
So that phone call is just you completely want to avoid it. And I don't think there's a circumstance where you really want to make that call because the moment she picks the phone up, it's just what? Like there's no – yeah, anyway.
What's your other option?
Well, my option on that particular occasion was literally roll down the hill, roll as far as I could, and skipped into Berry Mountain Cycles, shout, thank you, and they reestablished or reconnected my luckily it was open, re-put the crank on and I was able to ride home. And I got home and I didn't say anything. Nothing. No. Because that's the other thing. No, it doesn't want to be any sort of information of what happened. Just move on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also have a little short fuse sometimes. So if I get a mechanical and I'm in Sydney, I just want to call the Uber, get the thing in there, don't worry about the money, just get home. I don't want to stand there. Honey, I've got a mechanical. Can you come? She has to pack up. She has to get in the car. She has to drive all the way out. It could be 30, 40 minutes before she's there. And then so it's not just – it's an hour plus out of her day. I just cop it straight away. Cost of doing business.
I will say this did cross my mind when I was thinking about it afterwards because it wasn't relative in that particular circumstance. I would call you. I would call an Uber, but if it was a situation – yeah, I think I would, where the Uber wasn't a potential option, even if it was just to get to your house or something. Like, yeah, that would be my
option. Come
on,
buddy. Let's go. Just, up.
We just don't even – when it doesn't need to be said. Just doesn't matter. Get in, right, move on, dump me off. Good. We'll talk about it later. Fine. Yeah, that would be it because, yeah, no circumstances where that's particularly going to happen. Another random one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Hydra packs to a crit, yes or no? Because you know who you are and you were seen with a Hydra pack. So here's what I'm thinking. It's the new vibe trend of 2023, 2024. So you know how when it was bar bags?
Yeah, yeah.
So you'd turn up to a crit with your bar bag on. Now, there was some practical purposes behind that, especially like we had cameras and stuff, so you'd put – you know, hand the cameras out in the bar bags. But, you know, let's be honest.
It was more of a fashion.
It was a
vibe call.
It was a vibe decision. Yeah. I think it's moved to the Hydra pack. So, and I noticed that said Hydra pack rider didn't ride any bottles, just rode out with his Hydro. Then after the race, Hydra pack back on, refueling, home. I think it's the new vibe call.
It's a look though,
oh,
because it's carried over from gravel. I hate to say it, but there is a cool look to the hydration pack that, I mean, it looks, I would prefer to see someone having a hydration pack than aero socks. I think it looks kind of cool.
The ultimate flex would be the Hydra pack in the crit.
Mm. Oh,
so I would like to see that going forward.
It also looks pro. No one knows what you're doing. It's like, are you off for 4 hours of extras? Like, no one's really quite sure what the purpose is. So you've also playing that card.
Yeah.
It's a mysterious, is he just come from a 4 hour loop or something? You never really know.
Actually, that reminds me, sorry just to go back to this again, but I saw one standard last night. This is a Criterium race in Sydney, happens on Tuesday night. So one standard wasn't racing. The guy was arriving to watch the race beforehand. He had the t-shirt on, he had the cargo bibs, he had kind of like the laced shoes, pure vibe, looked super cool, right? Wasn't in a race. That's cool. Absolute influenced, turned up, looking cool. That's where that bike should be, all right? That's
not it. In the race.
Not in the race.
On the side of it.
On the sideline, okay. Looking great. Yeah. I do see this a little bit in the comments where people say something like, oh, there were so many ads in this week's episode, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, there were 6 sets of ads, et cetera. So we don't have – so as it stands right now in October, we don't have any say as to how many ads get put into this or where those ads appear, right? Now, and the other thing I will say about all that is – so that's how at the moment really this show is sort of generates any revenue is just through the AdSense stuff through YouTube. The podcast stuff – so there hasn't been any show – partners, I suppose, or we haven't done any ad reads or anything like that. Now, in November, YouTube's going to change that and allow you to select where the ads go. So theoretically, we could like stop talking about a topic and then that's where the ad break goes in, etc. So that's kind of useful. And you can also, from what I understand, choose how many ads go in. So that kind of, again, affects the revenue side of it. So what I'm potentially tempted to play with in November and December is how many ads go down, and one option of reducing the ads on YouTube for a period and doing one or two of those ad read things to bring in revenue. Because ultimately if we drop the number of ads on a YouTube video, it's going to bring less revenue from that perspective.
And if the ads annoy you that much, just get YouTube Premium.
Mm.
Most of if you're watching this show on YouTube right now, you probably watch a lot of cycling or a lot of YouTube in general, and it's just get YouTube Premium. It's so nice not having to watch the ads. It's not that expensive. It's as someone who recently got YouTube Premium, it's so worth it.
Yeah, big time. And it like from our perspective, like when you watch it on YouTube, it's more valuable than a podcast player. Like that's just a fact. So, you know, liking and subscribing and all that stuff's great, but actually just watching it on YouTube is very much the way to go.
Yeah, if you can, that would be good.
But I'm keen to play with that ads thing because I do know that frustration of like you're talking and then an ad just pops in the middle of that word there and then you're coming out the other side. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that would make the show more pro as well. That like I could even say something like, okay, and when we come back after the break. Anyway, I don't know. Confirmed. The audio has worked thus far.
Yeah.
All
how do we sound this episode?
How do we sound?
I think we sound pretty good, hey?
Video's there. Very good. I'm going to end this before it itself. Probably we'll have to cut out that S word due to our new strikes. Anyway, talk to you soon.
Yep.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.